News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Evershed Sutherland, Ireland's largest and most established global law firm, with full service teams for your legal and tax solutions.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair, Richard Shakespeare. He's the Chief Executive of Dublin City Council. Richard, you're very welcome to the programme.
Many thanks, Bobby. Delighted to be here.
Now, with a name like Shakespeare, I have an image of culture and literature and all sorts of good things. But tell us a little bit about your early beginnings. You're a South Dublin man. I'm not sure you're from Lower Fox Rock or Upper Dean's Grange. Which is it?
It depends whether you're buying or selling a house. If you're selling it, it's very definitely Fox Rock. If you're buying, you're talking about Dean's Grange. But I suppose I've lived there most of my life.
Yeah.
But I suppose very early years would have been in Sandy Cove, in a little spot called Rosier Mansions, which I don't think exists anymore. My late father was a press photographer.
Right.
And so we'd have moved up to where, about four doors from where I'm living now, back in the early 60s, mid 60s. That was a you might say your classic idyllic type of thing. There were lots of fields around back in those days. And I went to school, unlike a lot of my friends at the time who were going to St. Michael's and Black Rock and all of these places. I went to a little known school out in Loughlinstown or Ballybrack, depending on your perspective, called St. Lawrence College, run by an American Marianists from Dayton, Ohio.
Okay, right. And from there it was on to UCD, I take it, to study ag science, yeah?
Oh, yeah, the ruralification of me to an extent. And that's where I met my wife. You know, doesn't happen these days that much, you know. But so I did a degree in agricultural science, specialising in landscape horticulture.
Okay.
And then, because jobs were hard to come by, I did a master's in agricultural engineering, and I finished that in 1990, same year I got married, and the same year I started with Dublin County Council.
Interesting enough, back in those days, you started as a graduate park superintendent.
Yeah.
So there was a graduate programme within the council, I suppose, trying to find the next management or...
Well, no, what it was it was just the entry grade. At that stage, it really was just about, I suppose it was a way of getting younger people in on the, what you would call the professional side of things. And so from that perspective, it wasn't a particular graduate programme. I think it was, because again, as usual, back in those days, there was a moratorium on public sector recruitment.
Yeah.
You were in as a temporary graduate on a month-to-month contract at the time.
Okay.
So it was, I won't call it indentured servitude, but it wasn't an awful lot more better than that, you know.
Some would describe that as maybe an ideal job, park superintendent. What was the role? What did the role actually entail?
So, okay, I mean, some of us ended up working on the ground, and then some of us ended up, you know, office based. And I used to do an awful lot of the, what they call the parks planning. For South Dublin, and that was assessing planning applications in terms of open space provision, looking for financial contributions and things like that. So it was actually great. I mean, you were walking around fields, parks, and getting paid for it, and sort of, I suppose, you had an opinion as to the way things should look, or you know. So it was.
We've so many beautiful parks in Dublin, Richard. How do we compare with other European cities when it comes to, like, our parks, our urban parks, let's call them?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, and I'd like to give a real shout out to a former boss of mine, a fellow called Michael Lynch, who was the park superintendent for County Dublin. And he's the reason why you have Ardgillan Domain, Newbridge House, Malahide, Castle, Marley Park, Cabinteely Park.
Yeah.
You know, all of those, that necklace of parks around the, basically around the M50. And he started amassing those back in the early to mid 70s. He was a very young senior park superintendent that they called him at the time.
And they're now huge assets, are they not?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I suppose you might say that was, I suppose, when I look at my big break as such, it was commercialising public parks.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people love it, some people hate it in terms
You're the man who brought the Red Hot Chili Peppers to Marley Park.
Well, you know, I would have created the opportunity for all manner of artists. But again, because I had a relationship with the locals up around Marley Park, I was able to convince them that it wasn't going to be the end of the world.
And tell me about that, because again, you know, we have this view of the council being a very staid and almost, you know, conservative place, that, you know, the idea of holding rock concerts in a public park, which has probably only got downside for a council in many ways, you know, getting them to do that and seeing the upside of the benefits that it provided.
Well, I suppose you've got to go after the internal hurdles first. And I was very lucky. There was a county manager at the time, a fellow called Derek Brady, who was a bit of a muso.
Yeah.
So that helped. And I nearly sworn that we were never going to do it again, because I think it was the FM 104
Monster Day Out.
And I inherited the role around Marley Park the Monday after, I think it was a Kerry Ann or something like that, had shut South Dublin down, because the road network wasn't the way it was. There was 40,000 people in Marley Park, and it was an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
So I sort of vowed, and then I dug into it a little deeper, and I then asked a fellow who I knew in the business, said, could we do commercial stuff here? And he said, yeah, if you move the stage. So then it was talked to Derek. Derek thought this was a great idea, a potential commercial opportunity. And in those days, Dunleary Rathdown didn't have the financial wherewithal it does now.
Yeah,
it was still suffering from the abolition of rates back in domestic rates back in the 70s. But it, so I mean, and I still remember the first couple of shows there. You know, was David Gray for three nights.
I saw Sting up there.
Yeah, Van Morrison and Sting.
Yeah,
so that was 2001. And the second night for David Gray, the roof had blown off the stage, so we played under a tarpaulin with a camera underneath it. So he didn't get electrocuted by what was going on around him. I was at every concert in Marley for, I'd say, 15 years.
Yeah.
Never really went to them, if that makes sense.
Well, you were working.
And it was all about touching base with the locals. And there was a real benefit there. We were able to do stuff. The money that was generated, we were actually able to keep the vast majority of it local. Within Marley Park, helped develop a couple of new playgrounds up there, but also improved the pitches, the drainage.
That's the name of the game, isn't it? If you know that people will allow you scope if you can channel the benefits back to the community.
Absolutely. And yeah. I mean, it's funny, like, you know, I did a bit of a rinse and repeat with the park superintendent here. We now do Fairview Park and St. Anne's Park. Every summer for the last two or three years. And again, it's about reinvesting in Fairview Park, reinvesting in St. Anne's Park. There's tea rooms and all of these bits and pieces that people actually want to see now in a park. Before, I mean, when I started, you know, the paths were shale, you know, it was, and I always remember trying to push my twins around in 2000, around Cabin Teely Park, and it was easier to push them around on the grass because the paths weren't surfaced.
Yeah, I know. It's and I live beside the People's Park in Dunleary, and I think it's one of the greatest places.
I great crack establishing
the tea rooms there.
Well, the market.
Yeah. Which again was a massive success.
Yeah, but I mean, an awful lot of people paying €70 a week to trade there. And again, when you aggregate that up, if they're paying €70 and there's 70 of them, that's $5,000 a week.
Yeah.
Okay, management fee of about 1,500. So there's $3,500 a week, which when you look at it, is probably about 150,000 a year. And then if you take that view on it, you can actually use that money to improve the park. And, you know, Dunleary Rathdown spent quite an amount of money redoing the tea rooms, redoing the lodge, and its whole presentation to the sea.
Yeah. But it's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. No, tell me then, back to you and your career, the trajectory through, I suppose, through the council in terms of promotion. You're now the Dublin City manager. Tell me about just the
35-year meteoric rise.
Yeah, I'm interested in how that works.
Okay, so I would have I came in as a graduate, and then in about 1992, there was a competition for what they call assistant park superintendents or assistant engineers, assistant architects, and they used to be run through the local appointments commission, or as I used to refer to them, the local disappointments commission, and. You know, so became an assistant park superintendent. Then in 1994, Dublin County Council was dissolved and the Fingal County Council was created. So Dublin County Council and Dunleary-Rathdown County Council. And Dunleary-Rathdown was the peculiar one to an extent because it was the amalgamation of the Deans Grange Joint Burial Board.
No one ever knows where Rathdown is.
Yeah, well, Rathdown is up the mountains. It actually came out of the Rathdown Committee of Dublin County Council, which was that Dundrum side of things. And, you know, so was moved up the ranks there. So I was an assistant for two or three years. Then you move into an executive park superintendent role. And while I was doing that, I then was, you know, there was a European project called the Sustainable Recreational Use of Natural Assets, and that was and it was all around Marley Park. And so I was then put into the Marley Park and managing 600-700 acres of public open space and street trees and all the various bits and pieces that go with it, which was great crack because it gave you a great opportunity to talk to the locals and encourage them in terms of their community work. But like what was really frustrating, what led to this, you might say, the commercialization side of things, was that didn't have money for the basics like planting a street tree. You were asking for a £15 contribution towards a street tree from a residents association. And you're going like, you know, this is fundamentally bonkers. So I had loads of staff and no money to do anything with.
Yeah.
And so after starting that sort of journey, there was a thing called in 2001, there was a thing called Better Local Government. And this is where they were trying to get rid of what they would call the dual stream in local government, where you had the administration on one side and us technical folk on the other side. And they were trying to get it that there was a single stream.
Okay.
So I was encouraged to go for what was called senior executive officer. Equivalent in the civil service would be an assistant principal. So I went for that and started off life then in the Culture, Community Development and Amenities Department in Dunleary-Rathdown County Council. And I had responsibility for libraries and some of the park stuff, burial grounds, all manner of different things. And, you know, so one of the first things, worked with a late architect called Bob Hannon.
Bob,
we were delegated with this thing of trying to find a location for what was the European Centre for Youth Culture and Creativity or something like that, and it was basically the library. So myself and Bob did a bit of site scoping, and then we settled on Moran Park. As to what it would be. I then sort of moved sideways, changed roles, and the project was driven forward by a fellow called Charlie McNamara. And that library, and I mean, you remember, you were from around there, like, you know, take a floor off the top of it, it's going to be desperate, it's going to be this.
It's funny you say that, because when you think about all the, you know, the talk, the opposition, 56 million or whatever it cost.
26.
What?
20.
26. Okay, well, again, you hear various figures.
Yeah.
But once the thing is built, and this is a perfect example, it becomes, everybody forgets about the cost.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, in 2014, when it was officially opened, I remember standing there with Owen Keegan. who would have been the real drive about getting it built and got an awful lot of stick for driving it through. But I remember sitting to him there going, like, wouldn't it be great to roll a banner down the side of that building saying, told you so. and you know what I mean? And a lot of it is, you might say, when you look at it now, that's 80,000 square feet of a cultural space that isn't just a library. It's so much more.
It looks fantastic, and it looks fantastic from the sea.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it sits nicely in. And in fairness to Louise Cotter, who was the architect, and she's from Cork, and she's now actually back working for us doing the fruit and vegetable market there at Mary's Lane.
So, Richard, I'm intrigued around your career, and you're, as I say, you're not typical of a chief executive of Dublin City Council. You're in that role now. I've heard you saying that one of your jobs, or one of your main jobs, is managing disappointment. Tell me more about that.
Well, I suppose it's kind of a mindset that, you know, you're not going to keep everybody happy all of the time. So you're trying to manage expectations, disappointment, and you might say to minimise the disappointment. When I took up the job there just about 14 months ago, my stall was like, can we get the basics right? So, I mean, my background in management would have been with UCD Soccer Club. You know, bad start to the league last night now, in fairness. And if you can do the simple things consistently well as a football team, you'll do well. You know, you move the ball, you do the bits and pieces. And my thing was about, can we get the simple things right? Like, so that's why I focused on the street cleansing piece first. And we'll move into other areas, and that's getting better. But there was a definite lack of resource.
The city was devastated in lots of ways by COVID and all that happened around that. And some would say it's never really recovered in terms of its commerce, its vibrancy, its safety, its cleanliness, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Have you a plan in your head for the city
I would slightly disagree with you in terms of COVID. I mean, the biggest shock to the city, and particularly the city council, was in 2008. Okay, at that stage we had 7,200 staff. Okay, doing all those basic things, but as needs must, we went on there was a moratorium in terms of recruitment, and by 2016. We were down to 5,400.
So that's about 20% odd reduction, 25%
reduction. Yeah. So something's got to give. And, the basics are the first things to suffer. You know what I mean? Because if we were getting wholesale retirements or redundancies out of a particular sector, be it waste management or parks or whatever, and you can't replace them. And a lot of the stuff is you can't do, AI isn't going to clean the streets for you.
Yeah.
Technology isn't. Now, we can improve our systems and processes by utilising technology and getting insights as to where our real problems are. But I think you then roll forward and we're starting to get back into it, and then you get hit with COVID. And the government mandate that everybody's a right to work from home, and particularly in the public sector. I think I worked about 4 days from home because I was so special at the time, that I wrote myself a letter to enable me to go to the office, because I had four lads at home and a wife, and there wasn't needed a physical or mental bandwidth to deal with it. So I'm
off to the office, lads. Yeah. I'll see you at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
It was kind of a soulless time.
Yeah.
But
that point that you make about working from home, that's one of the things that's changed the city.
Yeah, I mean, from talking to Richard Guiney in Dublin Town and some of the traders, you know, the footfall has got back up. Now, I think an awful lot of that, or not an awful lot of it, but some of it would definitely be tourism, because the tourism footfall is,
yeah,
you know, very reasonably solid. But I think what it is that I referred to them at the time, you know, as ne'er-do-wells, were emboldened. The people who, you know, believe the rules don't apply to them, and, you know, so they became far more obvious for those of us that would be in and out of the city on a more frequent basis. You saw them more. You know, there was, you couldn't see them in a dense crowd, but when the crowd had thinned out, you could do. And I mean, I think, you know, when you look at, you might say, trying to grow the footfall, it's about the retail offer. It's about how people's perception of safety. And that's really, really important. Yeah. I mean, what I look at, you know, a safety perception is around, you know, okay, one is the clean streets, but the vacancy and dereliction, which is something that we really have to tackle as a city council. Now, we also need to be financially empowered to do it. And, you know, even if I had the money to repay borrowings, the local government sector nationally has a borrowing limit of 118 million per annum.
So is money your biggest issue in terms of solving, terms of creating the vision?
Absolutely. Because, you know what I mean? You know, it is, you know, when I look at things, you know, show me the money, not the love, you know, Jerry Maguire. Because without money, I can't recruit people. I can't employ consultants, can't buy machinery.
Yeah.
Can't buy property. You know what I mean? And I've no difficulty sort of taking a punt on stuff and trying to turn it around, you know, sort of the living over the shop stuff. But it's got to make sense. I can't just wade in and everybody says, oh, it's great to have, you know, affordable housing. But if it's unaffordable for the local authority to provide it.
Yeah.
And so that's where, you know, where you have sort of market failures, where the state needs to step in. And they're doing that with sort of, to an extent with social housing, some on the affordable stuff. But what's affordable in these days? And I'm not going to even posit that. But I mean, we got permission there Monday night from the councillors to borrow 132 million to deliver 380 or so, what they call cost rental homes. Up in the old St. Michael's estate in Inchicore. Well, that's a 40-year financial play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So a lot of it does. And I mean, you even take Daly Mount, the new library, fruit and vegetable market. I need to borrow 120 million to get those over the line.
Finally, can I ask you, are you enjoying the job?
Oh, Jesus, great crack.
Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, it really is. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's the type of job you can do if you're not enjoying it.
Yeah.
Because I'm certainly not doing it for the money. There's easier ways. I'm well paid, but there's definitely easier ways of making money. You know?
On that money note, we'll leave it there. Richard Shakespeare, what a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much,
Thanks
Bobby.
For coming into us this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.